For many people, commemorating the Civil War is a time to reflect on some of its most important accomplishments, like the end of slavery and the expansion of American freedom. But starting right after the war, many Americans chose not to remember the Civil War in these terms. In fact, they played down some of the very issues over which they'd gone to war in order to promote national harmony between North and South. Historian David Blight teaches history at Yale University and is the author of Race and Reunion, The Civil War in American Memory. Blight says Americans in both sections played a role in whitewashing the history of the Civil War in favor of a more unified nation.
At the outset of the Civil War, without a question, the vast majority of white Northerners were not willing to accept emancipation as a result of the war. They were not willing to be part of armies and navies that would destroy slavery. The war itself, in many ways, the scope of it, the scale of the bloodletting and the sacrifice and devastation made many white Northerners into at least anti-slavery advocates. The vast majority of Northerners who had supported the war actually took pride by 1865 that the Union war effort had destroyed slavery. It became a source of national pride to have destroyed slavery. But the interesting thing about that is that so many Northerners with time came to see that as a sort of permanent deed about which there was nothing more that needed to be done.
And at the same time, then, in the South, you have people whose society was, as you put it, crushed, taken out of existence, wanting it back.
Indeed, they did want it back, and they wanted it back as early as they could get it back. Southern white Democrats, the Democratic Party in the South, gets organized, certainly by the election of 1868, especially by the election of 1872. Some of that organization was, of course, done through the use of terror. The Ku Klux Klan between 1868 and 1871 was an arm of the Democratic Party's redemption, as they called it, of the Southern states. Southerners wanted home rule, and they wanted to turn the clock back if they could. Certainly on the question of black suffrage and the political liberties of African Americans. But a lot of what occurs in the South is also a kind of economic revolution. White Southerners want to keep blacks as their labor force, but they want to keep them not as political actors.
What's interesting is that the North was willing eventually to acquiesce in this, to accept the Southern version of what happened during the Civil War. But also that the soldiers who fought, at least if I understand your argument, began to want to view their enemies as having been noble warriors engaged in the same sort of honorable battle that they had been. And to be honest, that makes no sense to me.
Well, that takes a while, Jim. It takes some years before Union and Confederate veterans are able to get together for reunions and clasp hands across the bloody chasm, as the phrase went.
How does it come about, though? How does it get started? Because you'd think that, that the antipathy there would be strong enough to keep them apart forever.
Well, there was a great deal of antipathy, but it begins around the sense of mutual experience, of the mutual sense of suffering that all soldiers face by simply going through combat and going through warfare. Eventually, by the late 1870s and early 1880s, particularly when you reach the 20th anniversary period of the Civil War, every major American magazine and most major American newspapers explicitly recruit ex-soldiers to write about their experiences in a reconciliationist, depoliticized mode.
What happens to what they fought for in the process? In this case, what happens is that emancipation is lost.
Well, it is indeed in many ways. Eventually, soldiers remember and reminisce about their personal experiences. It is the essence of reminiscence. We remember what happened to us. We want to tell the story of our personal sacrifice, our personal suffering. And in many ways, what you find here on a scale like no other American war, frankly, you have a lot of men who feel like they have an experience which has set them apart in society. They saw the war. They campaigned with Grant. They campaigned with Lee. They suffered at Andersonville. They suffered at Camp Douglas. And that experience sets them apart from civilian life. And increasingly, lots of Union veterans by the 1880s and 90s find that they may have as much in common with some Confederate veterans as they do with the new generation of Northerners.
What was the black reaction?
Well, to most African Americans, the whole spirit of early reconciliation and reunion, the honoring of Robert E. Lee when he dies in 1870 as increasingly a national hero already, the use of claims of Southern home rule over against the Reconstruction governments was devastating. Frederick Douglass, as their leading spokesman, at one point said he was, quote, nauseated by the constant flatteries of Robert E. Lee. It was as though the cause for which the Union had fought and the cause of black freedom was somehow being slowly abandoned in the interest of a reunited country and a kind of new nationalism.
And was he right?
Eventually, in many ways, he was. By the 1890s, and certainly by the time we reached the 50th anniversaries of the Civil War and Emancipation, much of the cause, this is the tragedy of this story, much of the cause for which the Union war effort had been fought had been abandoned politically. What you have in America by 1900, and certainly by 1911 to 1915, the semi-centennial of the war, is a kind of racially segregated memory of what the Civil War had been about.
What I'm curious about, again, looking back at this, do you think that there was a conscious effort to change the memory of the Civil War to one that felt better, to ignore the issue of slavery entirely?
It's a very good question. How often is the construction of national memory or any kind of group memory a conscious attempt, and how often is it simply a part of a process of history? It's really both, Jim. I'll give you one example. One of the ways that so many white Northerners were drawn in to a Southern vision of the Civil War era was through this image of the faithful slave. Thomas Nelson Page was the best-selling American author by 1890, and story after story after story, where his so-called happy darky would be the narrator of the reunion of North and South, and usually the marriage between a Yankee soldier and a Southern white woman. The narrator's voice in American popular fiction about the Civil War by the 1890s is the voice in dialect of a so-called faithful slave. Now, is that a creation on purpose by Thomas Nelson Page? You bet it is. Are most white Northerners who were buying into it looking consciously for a way to admire the South? No, not always. Some of this occurs, of course, on a kind of subliminal level.
But it occurs to me also, you were talking earlier about the bloody shirt being waved. And in general, that means the bloody garment of a white soldier, Northern or Southern. But
yes,
there were also stories,
yes,
from the black soldiers. There were as many shirts to be waved and,
oh, yes,
as much blood spilled on the ground. But I suppose that people would much rather hear from the faithful slave than from the rebellious slave.
Oh, they would indeed, but there was a black bloody shirt. Blacks begin to have Emancipation Day celebrations as early as 1864, and for decades and decades, and particularly by the 1890s and after the turn of the century, African Americans conducted emancipation exhibitions in towns and cities all over the United States. There were hundreds and hundreds of them. Some of them were big spectacles that went on for 2 weeks at a time. Some of them were just one-day picnics. But African Americans never let the story of the black soldier and the black soldier's sacrifice die in their own community's memories.
David Blight is the author of several books on the history of the South and the Civil War. We spoke about his book Race and Reunion, The Civil War in American Memory, which has received 8 book awards, including the prestigious Bancroft Prize. David Blight teaches history at Yale University.